Okay, good morning, everybody, and thank you again for coming to learn on this monthly basis. It's so wonderful to see all of you back again, and we're going to continue, Be'ezras Hashem, our series on Rav Moshe Feinstein and his halachic adversaries. And in this one, I think we have one of the more interesting halachic debates. One of the more controversial halachic debates that ever involved Rav Moshe Feinstein, and we're going to talk about Rav Menashe Klein, and particularly the issue about the Flatbush Eruv. For anyone who ever followed the story, if you're around in the late 70s and the 80s, and the controversy continued into the 90s and the 2000s and Ada Yom Hazeh, I think there are still Eruvin being cut down every week in Brooklyn by zealots. So it's a fascinating story. There's a fascinating history to it. Much of it I'm not privy to. There's a lot of backroom dealings and things of that nature. But I thought it would give us a good opportunity to talk a little bit about Rav Menashe Klein and a little bit about this controversy. So first about Rav Menashe Klein. Rav Menashe Klein was born in near Ungvar, which is a town in Czechoslovakia. It's actually where my grandfather is from, Ungvar. Rav Menashe Klein was born in 1924, was a Talmud of the original Ungvar Rav. He himself was known as the Ungvar Rav, but he was a Talmud of the original Rav Yosef Elimelech Kahana, and as a young person, he was an Eloi, he was a genius in learning, and then the war broke out when he was a young man, and he ended up in Auschwitz and Buchenwald, and living through an absolute Gehenim. In fact, in his Haggadah Shel Pesach, he has about a 30-page write-up in Hebrew of all of that which he went through, all of the yisurin that he suffered, detailed description of that which he suffered through the Holocaust. And whenever you see a person who's been through such an experience, there is no judging, right? A person becomes a kadosh immediately by going through such an experience. And he describes how he tried to fulfill different mitzvos, how they pulled apart their barracks to try to make a sukkah on sukkis, and how they did whatever they can to stay connected to Torah and mitzvos. And then he went with over 400 former prisoners after the war, including Rav Lau and the Kretschnefer Rebbe, and most notably Elie Wiesel, and I think my grandfather too, to France after the war, and he became a lifelong friend of Elie Wiesel. Elie Wiesel and Rav Menashe Klein were best of friends. They did not live similar lives at all, but they were best of friends. In fact, Kiryas Ungvar, which Rav Menashe Klein built in Eretz Yisrael, was mostly with Elie Wiesel's money before he lost so much with Madoff and everything, but it was mostly with donations from Elie Wiesel to help build Kiryat Ungvar. A Talmud of mine, who's a grandnephew of Menashe Klein, told me that he remembers Rav Menashe Klein saw Elie Wiesel and recited the bracha of Shechianu. He hadn't seen him in a while, and he felt that it was worthy of a bracha. That's how close and beloved to each other they were. There's something about the bonds that are forged in the hells of Auschwitz and Buchenwald that cannot be broken regardless of the types of lives that people lived. He in fact, Rav Lau, as I'm sure you've all read his memoir, Rav Lau was a young child when he went through the Holocaust. The one who taught him how to say Kaddish after the war was Rav Menashe Klein. They were together. His son said that he made a neder, that Rav Menashe Klein made a neder when he saw the smoke coming from the gas chambers, that as soon as he saw it, he knew exactly what it was, and he said that if I make it out alive, I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life toward Avodas Hashem. Then he moved to the U.S. in 1947. He was a Rav in Williamsburg, and originally was a principal in a Mossad that was under the leadership of the Kleisenberger Rebbe before starting his own yeshiva. However, in a way, his son-in-law said he really never left Auschwitz. He never let himself partake of the pleasures of Olam Hazeh. His home was like stepping into a time capsule. His diet was frugal. He would subsist on the Rebbetzin's Shabbos challah the entire week. He had the corner of 53rd Street and 16th Avenue in Borough Park officially renamed Zichron Kedoshim Square by Mayor Rudy Giuliani. He lived with Auschwitz on his mind his entire life. In 1983, he started Kiryat Ungvar in Ramallah. Ramot, and he was always known as, he always signed his name as Menashe HaKatan, and he was a prolific writer. He wrote, I believe, 17 volumes of his tshuvas, Mishnah Halachos. Some people mock it, and you know, the people who don't like him, they call it Mishana Halachos, like he's changing the halachos. Someone else told me that they used to daven in a shul, and he called it Mishana Halachos, but not as a change, as a teacher of that he's being shown the halachos. So he, well, whatever it is, the Sefer is 17 volumes of very fascinating tshuvos on every topic, every contemporary topic you could imagine. He wrote 25 other svarim, at least, including a commentary on the Bahag. He published his correspondences with his mechutin, the Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe. He wrote a detailed account of the Holocaust, I mentioned before, in his Haggadah. In fact, in the beginning of the Haggadah, of his commentary in the Haggadah, he said that this commentary was written against his will. It was his children who wrote it, based on his teachings, and he did not want to publish anything on Haggadah. He only wanted to publish on Halacha. And he explains that when you publish on Halacha, you have to explain your reasoning, you have to bring proofs, everything needs to be concrete. And therefore, if you are wrong, someone will prove that you are wrong. And that's the way it should work, he said. When it comes to Haggadah, you say an idea, it sounds like a nice idea, you don't have that same confidence of the truth of the idea, and therefore he was against the publication of his commentary on the Haggadah, but ultimately he came around and he agreed to it and he wrote a Hakdama to it. He has a number of very important psakim. He was very strongly anti-Chabad messianism. In 2009, he said that anybody who thinks the Rebbe is alive is an apikores, and they're a sect of crazies, and they should make a huge macha against the reciting of Yechi. He believed it was a disgrace to the Rebbe. He was someone who was actually very close with the Rebbe. He had a close relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rebbe used to say that this fellow calls himself Hakatan, but he is in fact very big. He always signed his name Menashe Hakatan, but he's in fact very, very big. He would attend Farbrengens and other Chabad events. He had some controversial psakim about Agunos and other issues. I remember I once submitted an essay to a publication, a halacha publication, and the editor of the publication would not permit me to submit the essay as is because I quoted Rav Menashe Klein. So there were certain things that were controversial about him that some people did not take to, but by the large majority of Klal Yisrael, his opinion is something to contend with. It is something that has to be incorporated into the halachic discussion because he was an enormous Talmud Chacham. In Chelek Yud, Simon Kuf Tes Zayin, Rav Menashe Klein in the Mishnah Lachos ruled that it is prohibited to celebrate Thanksgiving. That was another, a topic that we could have done if we're doing Rav Menashe Klein or Rav Moshe, had it not been for the Erev issue, which is just so much bigger. He has a very troubling tshuva in Chelek Dalid Simon Reish Mem Hei about donating blood. He discusses various halacha considerations associated with blood donation, but he suggests that it's inappropriate that hadamu nefesh, that a Jew is going to donate blood and it's going to go to a nachri. The nefesh of a Yehudi should not go inside of a nachri, and based on that he thinks that it's problematic. That is a very, very tiny minority opinion. We generally assume it is a great mitzvah to donate blood, and even if you're not donating through Chai Lifeline or to somewhere that you know is a Jewish cause, we're participating in this great system that the hospitals in our country has, where you have this, where the more people that participate, we're all going to be protected. So it's a wonderful thing to do. But these are some of his controversial psakim. What was his relationship with Rav Moshe Feinstein? I'm not sure on a personal level what their relationship was, but not surprisingly, there are hundreds of places in the Mishnah Halachos that Rav Klein quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein. Also, not surprisingly, there are only about a half dozen places where Rav Klein's name comes up in the Igros Moshe. Why is that? Why is it so uneven? Well, it's partially because Rav Klein was younger than Rav Moshe by a few decades, but mostly because, as we've pointed out in so many of these shiurim, most of the other poskim in Rav Moshe Feinstein's generation quoted contemporaries, and there was no greater contemporary than Rav Moshe Feinstein himself, than you had to deal with what Rav Moshe wrote. Rav Moshe's style was not to quote contemporary poskim at all. He quoted Nadav Yehuda's and Chasam Sofer's and Rav Shlomo Kluger's and the Shach and the Taz and the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara's. He didn't quote the contemporary poskim, the other people of his generation. So why does Rav Menashe Klein appear at all in Igros Moshe? Because he wrote tshuvas to Rav Menashe Klein. So in the address line, when he says to dear Rabbi Klein, so that's where Rav Menashe Klein appears in the Igros Moshe. That was the style of Rav Moshe's psak, and it's also Rav Moshe was known as, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else as the posek adar. There was no doubt that he was the posek. In fact, Rabbi Eitan Feiner just spoke in my shul this morning in honor of our Chanukah Savayis, and he told the story that a Talmud of Baruch Ber Leibovich once came to Rav Moshe Feinstein with a very serious shaila. He asked the shaila, it was a very involved shaila, and like that, you know, nothing. Rav Moshe just responded, answer. He gave a tshuva. And the guy started yelling at Rav Moshe, how dare you? I learned by Rav Baruch Ber. Do you know what a giant Rav Baruch Ber was? If I would ask him such a shaila, he'd lock himself up in a room for 3 weeks before giving an answer. And just like that, you give an answer to a shaila? And Rav Moshe said to him, Rav Baruch Ber is a greater lamdan than I am. But I'm the posek hadar. And with that comes siyata d'shmaya. And the siyata d'shmaya to paskin demands of the posek to be able to paskin tekef umiyat, that you have to be able to respond when you know the answer. You have to be able to respond and have the confidence in psak. It doesn't sound like Rav Moshe to say such a thing about himself, but that's certainly the way everybody else thought of Rav Moshe. So it's not surprising that Rav Moshe doesn't quote Rav Menashe Klein too much, and Rav Menashe Klein quotes Rav Moshe. There is one amazing tshuva that Rav Moshe has to Rav Menashe Klein other than the Eruv discussion, and that is in Orach Chaim Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Tes in Igros Moshe. Rav Moshe writes, Hinei Mashe Misnatzel Kvotoros Harav B'mashe Choluk Olai B'dvar Halacha. He says, that which you apologize for disagreeing with me in a matter of halacha, hulamosar, it's unnecessary to apologize. Ki kein derech haTorah shetzarich levarara emes. That's the way Torah is supposed to work. If I'm not supposed to just issue edicts, I write tshuvas where I explain things, much the way we pointed out before. Menashe Klein explains why he doesn't want to write divrei agada. I'm explaining things so that we can arrive at the truth. That's what it's all about. V'chas v'shalom milishtok misha sover she'eno kein ben l'kula ben l'chumra. And it would be a terrible violation on your part if you thought that I was incorrect. Correct, and you didn't say anything? Of course you have to say something if you feel that I'm incorrect. And he discusses, but isn't this a violation of Osana al Rav, that you shouldn't argue with someone who's greater than you? He says, no, it doesn't mean to say that it's Asur Lanos al Rav, the Adraba Asur Lo Lishtok. It just means that it's Asur to be quiet when you know that he's wrong. So what does Osana al Rav mean? It means that you set up a system where you aren't going to be put in a position where you're going to have to disagree with someone greater than you. When the Sanhedrin is adjudicating a case and they have to discuss the details, they set it up that they're maschilin min atzad, that they begin with the younger and smaller dayanim to speak first, so that they wouldn't have to argue on the greater dayanim if the greater dayanim speak first. That's Osana al Rav, that you set up a system where you won't have to come to argue, but if the greater dayanim were to speak first and the lesser dayanim were to disagree, they would have an absolute obligation to disagree. And that's Rav Moshe goes on with more halachic details on that idea. And then he says, and also, by the way, he says, we don't even have such a thing as a gadol mufla nowadays. I'm certainly not in that category, Rav Moshe writes. And he points out the Raman, that it's always tov lahaskul menakot, and that's because l'chadchila yeshal kol panam lahachmir. That l'chadchila one should be machmir for something like that, but that's only a lechadchila. So b'zman hazeh, even when there's no gadol mufla, there's such a din lechadchila not to put yourself in a position to have to argue with someone greater. And therefore, Rav Moshe says lachein. Even if you think of me as a gadol, you're allowed to argue. And if you're allowed to, you must. I object to your apology. You know, which is a strong statement. You know, sometimes people call a rabbi, "Rabbi, I apologize for taking your time. It's my job to give you my time, right? That's what I'm paid for, right? So you shouldn't apologize for taking my time. If not that, then what am I here for?" I saw someone on Twitter recently said that he noticed that a lot of American rabbis, they call themselves rabbi. They say, you know, why don't they just call themselves by the first name, Derech Hanivus? So someone responded that putting your name rabbi out there is just a way of saying I'm here to help. Meaning the word rabbi just means I'm here to help. So now you know that if you need something, I'm here to help you. I thought that was a very beautiful idea. So Rav Moshe takes exception to the apology. Anyway, so that's an interesting tshuva. There are other tshuvas. Rav Moshe has an Ebenezer, Chelikal, Simin Yeral, Trav Menashe Klein about a Gioris marrying a Petsua Daka. That's a more complicated discussion. He has a long letter to him about some detailed Kachim Sugyar. Rav Moshe has a long letter to Trav Menashe Klein just talking and learning. Obviously, he wasn't allowed. It was about a sugya and kachim. But let's discuss the Eruv. The first discussion of a possible Eruv in Brooklyn can be found in tshuvas written in the late 1940s, but the real controversy got going in the 1970s. In 1978, Rabbi Sharfman and Rabbi Schreier, Zalim Gesunta, should be healthy, approached Rav Moshe about a Flatbush Eruv. Rav Moshe wrote two tshuvas. The tshuvas were addressed to Rabbi Pelayoff. Rav Moshe said that Hine, Kishahayu Etzli, Harabanim Achashuvim, Harav Agon Rav Sharfman Shlita, Harav Agon Rav Schreier Shlita, B'dvar Tikun Erev B'Flatbush. He said, when they approached me about making Erev in Flatbush, Va'amarti She'eni Rotzei L'Sarev Bazeh. He said, I told them, I don't want to get involved in this. And then he said that this is, I think, according to my opinion, this is a Rosh Hashanah D'Oraisa, and other people have other opinions, but so let them rely on other opinions. I didn't want to get involved. He says, Aval, me'achar she'yotza kol sha'ani hu matir be'etzem, mitzal doshan zeh she'amarti murchuch ani lovel b'zeh levar b'kitzer ma'ashani ba'atzmi sover. He said, I didn't want to get involved, but now I'm seeing that people are saying in my name that I was matir the Erev in Flatbush. So if people are saying in my name that I said it was okay, so I have to tell you my honest-to-goodness opinion. I have to tell you what I actually think about the Erev and Flatbush, and that motivated Rav Moshe to write a tshuva against his better judgment, about something that he was not interested in writing a tshuva about. There are a few famous tshuvas from Rav Moshe about Erevin. The Manhattan Erev, he did not hesitate to object to. Rav Moshe al the Manhattan, also the Rosh Hashanah D'Oraisa. The basic premise is that if something is a Rosh Hashanah on a D'Oraisa level, if it qualifies as a real Rosh Hashanah Rabbim on a Torah level, then it's not eligible for an Eruv. So once you're going to, it's not about, you know, are the strings wound tightly enough? Are the poles straight enough? Is the area an area that you know, that lends itself to a Tzuras HaPesach? It's not about the physical construction. It's mostly about, is it even eligible to begin with? Is it a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim on a D'Oraisa level? So Rav Moshe writes that for some reason he did not hesitate about the Manhattan Eruv, did not want to get involved in the Flatbush Eruv, and the other famous shuv is about the Kew Gardens Hills Eruv, where Rav Moshe was Makel. He allowed the Kew Gardens Hills Eruv. So Rav Moshe Klein disagreed in a kuntras called Omani Choma. Now, I spoke to a close friend of mine who was very close, very close family connection to one of the parties involved, one of the Chashva Rabbanim who had approached Rav Moshe originally, and he told me that the real original heter didn't come from Menashe Klein. The real original heter came from the author of the Sha'ar Mitzuyanim Bahalacha, Rav Brown. Was the author of Mishar Mitzion Ba'alacha, but Rav Brown said that he never got involved in Machlokas, and he really doesn't want this in his name. He doesn't want to get involved either. But he was the one that was really matirit. Rav Menashe Klein was willing to write a tshuva. So Rav Menashe Klein wrote Kuntros Omani Choma, and he said that there's a long tradition of Erevin in cities that have 600,000 people. So don't tell me that just because Brooklyn has 600,000 people, you can't make an Erev. Warsaw had 600,000 people, and they had an Erev. There were many cities that had 600,000 people, and they made an Erev anyway. It's always interesting. How much do you look at tradition, and how much do you look at what you know, what the facts on the ground are? I remember here in town, I live in the Five Towns, even though I'm here in Los Angeles every month. But here in the Five Towns, we have a wonderful Erev with almost every chumra you could imagine, except there's something called the Long Island Railroad. And the Long Island Railroad runs right in the middle of the Erev, right through the Eruv. So Rav Shechter holds, Moriv Rabbi Rav Shechter Shlita, who was just here for Shabbos, it was his first time away for a Shabbos in over a year, so it was very nice to have him. So Rav Shechter Shlita was asked to approve of the Eruv. We brought him in to make tikkunim. So when he first came, he made a lot of suggestions, and then he said, but it's a waste of time because the train is a Rosh Hashanah Bim Da'araisa, and therefore you can't have an Eruv in the five towns. So that wasn't going to fly. So at a meeting with all the Rabbanim in town, one of the Rabbanim said, but Rosh Yeshiva, in Vilna they had a train that ran through the town. So Rosh Hashanah's response was, they never asked me for Ashkach on the Erev in Vilna. they did what they did. I'm still allowed to hold differently. I'm allowed to... So that's a question. How much do you look at your own personal opinion? And how much do you look at what precedent is? So Menashe Klein says, there's precedent for this. As soon as it was built, proclamations were made that the greatest poskim already prohibited a Manhattan Erev and that Brooklyn is no different. And they said that, therefore, the people who effectively agreed that the Brooklyn Erev is no good are Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Bick was one of the great poskim at the time, Rav Henkin, Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov, Rav Gedalia Shur, and many others as well. So Rav Menashe Klein wrote back that Rav Moshe told him that he had only opposed the Manhattan Erev and he had never opposed the Brooklyn Erev, and that Rav Aaron Cutler wouldn't reject the Brooklyn Erev either. This is probably what motivated Rav Moshe to write this tshuva. Once Rav Menashe Klein published that Rav Moshe told him personally that he does not reject the Flatbush Erev, and people took that to mean that he accepts the Flatbush Eruv, Rav Moshe felt he had to say something. Most likely, Rav Moshe told Rav Menashe Klein, I did not write anything about the Flatbush Eruv. Not that I accept it, but that I did not reject it, meaning I stayed away. I didn't comment. I told them, you don't want my opinion because you're not going to like my opinion. Go somewhere else. And they, in fact, did go somewhere else. Obviously, they would have loved to get Rav Moshe on board because, as we said, he was the posek, but that's what motivated Rav Moshe to write this tshuva. Rav Menashe Klein said that he now sees that Rav Moshe retracted his support after seeing this tshuva, and that he and other Rabbanim who supported Rav Menashe Klein says, it's been terrible. We've been subjected to death threats, threats of severe physical harm. We've been receiving phone calls that people are going to cut our arms and legs off if we don't retract. Rav Menashe Klein claims that the proclamation signed by Rav Moshe saying that if you use this Erev, you're a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesya, is forged, because everybody knows Rav Moshe was the most edel person in the world, and he would never speak that way. In fact, my friend, who, as I mentioned, a good friend of mine, is a very close family relationship to one of the Rabbanim involved, he told me that his father told him that when the Vad originally asked Rav Moshe Zatzal, he told them that he's very machmir when it comes to these matters, and that they should ask someone local. So after they asked Rabbi Brown, the Shar Mitzion Balacha, not Rav Menashe Klein, they went back to Rav Moshe and asked him, if they put up the Eruv, will Rav Moshe come out and asr the Eruv? To which Rav Moshe said, no, I will not. If you look at the Nusach of the Tshuva, he says, since it says that I'm a matir, so muchrachani, I have no choice but to come out. But that was not his original intention. Rav Sharfman Zatzal said that one morning he was told to be careful leaving his house in the morning, and there was a box put in front of his house made to look like dynamite. Right? All l'shem shemayim. All l'shem shemayim. Right, this is all. This is the way. Don't mistake Jews for Judaism. I believe is how Rabbi Lord Sachs, as a Chassadic Lavracha, used to say. Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg just spoke in my shul this morning in honor of our Chanukah Sabayis, and he was saying that he wasn't sure what he was going to speak about when he was on the plane flying JetJew Airlines on the way to New York, on Fort Lauderdale to New York, 9:30 at night last night. He saw behavior that he decided he needs to speak about Kiddush Hashem. Sometimes you see behavior of our fellow Jews, and it's something that's somewhat embarrassing. Rabbi Schreier got garbage sent him in the mail. His kids' bicycles were stolen. Really horrible, horrible things. And it continued to be an issue until they built one in Borough Park, and then Borough Park became the issue, and then they started cutting down Erevin in Borough Park every week. But anyway, what's the key issue over here? Now we have 5 minutes to actually talk Torah. What's the key issue over here, where Flatbush is whether Flatbush is Rosh Hashanah Daraisa or not? If it's a Rosh Hashanah Daraisa, then you cannot make an Eruv, no matter how expertly designed. So the arguments for making the Eruv are, and that to suggest that it's not a Rosh Hashanah Daraisa, even though there are way more than 600,000 people that live there, is that no street in Flatbush runs from one end to the other. Even Flatbush Avenue and Bedford Avenue bend in the middle, while Ocean Parkway doesn't go the entire way. It doesn't bend, but it doesn't go the entire way. And that argument was used to permit the Eruv in Warsaw, where the population exceeded 600,000. If you don't have a single street that goes from end to end without bending, then that would not be Rosh Hashanah Daraisa. Furthermore, the Chazon Ish and Reb Chaim Eizer hold that if you have walls with omid merubah al haparetz, with more wall than opening on three sides, then that qualifies as a rishus hayachid on a daraisa level, which means that you can use a tzuras haPesach for the breaches as long as you have three walls that are omid merubah al haparetz that have more wall than openings. And in Flatbush, if you ever drive down Ocean Parkway, there are buildings and houses, and some very impressive-looking houses, on the side of the streets over there. So it's lined with buildings and fences. And that kula, Rabbi Jachter points out in his recent Sefer on Erevin, is ironically more common in very densely populated places. Meaning you would think the more densely populated places, the greater the chance that it's a Rosh Hashanah Daraisa. But if you hold that all these buildings, one after the other, creates this sense of a wall, where's that going to happen? That's going to be in very densely populated areas. So it comes out somewhat ironic. A third sad to say that it's not Rosh Hashanah Daraisa is the Aruch HaShulchan in Simin Shin Mem Hei. The Aruch HaShulchan holds that for a place to be Rosh Hashanah Daraisa, the particular street must be the only intercity thoroughfare or commercial center in the city. They used to have a town square. So if there was one town square where everybody would go, that's Rosh Hashanah Daraisa. But if you have a place like a Brooklyn where there are many commercial centers, every Jew's basement in Brooklyn is a commercial center. If you have a place that has so many commercial centers, so then you can't take one and say that that's Rosh Hashanah Daraisa. It means the Rosh Hashanah Daraisa means the place, the Rosh Hashanah. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan suggests. Rav Moshe strongly disagrees with that Aruch HaShulchan. He brings a raya that the Aruch HaShulchan is incorrect based on the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Beis, where it talks about how the Malach of Hotzah was done in the Mishkan and highlights that they carried in a place that was not the main thoroughfare. There are also some poskim that say that only pedestrians count when determining the 600,000. Pedestrians means people not in carts, people who are walking. If you have 600,000 pedestrians, it's a Rosh Hashanah Daraisa, which means you don't count people in trains or cars or anything else, which would mean that even Brooklyn would not be a Rosh Hashanah Daraisa. Rav Moshe or Chaim Chelek Dalet, Simen Pei Zayin and Simen Pei Ches says that this is not just pedestrian traffic that counts. It can't be. He said, look at the Midbar. We learned the whole idea of 600,000 from Diglei Midbar. You don't think they had wagons? They were all traveling by foot the whole time? Of course they had wagons. Wagons are cars. So if they had wagons and that counts as 600,000, cars also count to the 600,000. Rav Moshe held, though, a big kula. Rav Moshe held that the 600,000 is not calculated by total population. A lot of people don't realize this. They think he was machmir because, total population is 600,000. Rav Moshe says it's determined based on how many people would be traveling in the streets at a given time. Meaning rush hour traffic, how many people are out of their homes at a given time. And Rav Moshe calculated that it would take a population of 2.4 million residents in order to get to a real Rosh Hashanah Daraisa, where 600,000 people would be out in the street at one time. So that's an interesting, huge kula that Rav Moshe has, meaning people always think of how machmir he was about the Flatbush Erev because he held Rosh Hashanah Daraisa, but hidden in there is a significant, significant kula. Bottom line is, when it comes to Erevin, unfortunately, we don't always show our best sides when it comes to how we deal with communal controversy and with Erevin in particular, for whatever reason. And this was really a dark chapter, the idea that caused so much machlokas and such terrible behavior on behalf of not Chas V'Sholem from Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rav Menashe Klein, right? It's never the leaders that are the ones. It's very rarely, at least, the genuine Talmidei Chachamim, the great Gedolei Torah, that are the ones that are involved in these unseemly types of behaviors. But if it's not explained very carefully to those to the rank and file, just how, what it means to have a machlokas l'shem shemayim and how one ought to behave in a machlokas l'shem shemayim, it could so easily be taken out of context and be misunderstood and misapplied in the ugliest of ways. So it's a good reminder how important it is to speak respectfully of other people, especially of other talmidei chachamim, to disagree passionately and respectfully, always. And this is a message that should resonate. It should be a lesson. And I look forward to our next time and our next gadol.
What do you do about your Erev in your community now that Rav Herschel said that?
That's a very good question. It's a very good question. I happen to live in North Woodmere, which we built a cutoff where we don't. If I need to walk to Woodmere, then I'd be in violation of Rav Schechter's Psak. But we have a cutoff on a street called Branch Boulevard, which cuts us off from the rest of the Five Towns Eruv. Meaning they did it so that if the Eruv goes down in Lawrence, we're not in trouble. We'll be okay. If the Eruv goes down in Cedars, we'll still be okay. But it serves my benefit in that we sort of have an independent Eruv that does not have the Long Island Railroad. We actually have real walls on three sides because we're surrounded by water. That's why when Hurricane Sandy came, you know, it was not so great to be surrounded by water. But we're surrounded, so we have municipal fences on three sides. But in
you're on Rubala Pirates.
Oh yeah, yeah. We really yeah. We have like the best Erev. Yeah, I mean it's built
well,
for
our LA Erev is Amid Murubala Parts.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
It's the largest Amid Murubala Parts Erev in the world, I think.
Wow. We have about 14 miles of Erev in the Five Towns, so it's a big Erev. But when Rabbi Shai Schechter comes to speak in my shul. He came last night to speak together with his father. That was a nice event. So when he comes to speak, he drops off his notes before Shabbos. He won't carry his notes to shul and to my shul.
Because he has to walk from his. He has to cross through.
Yeah, he wouldn't walk out of his house carrying on Shabbos because he lives in Woodmere. He doesn't have the benefit of the cutoff that I have now. All other poskim that we've asked disagree with Rav Schechter about this. Rav Asher Weiss told us he disagrees with that. He disagrees with Rav Schechter about this issue, and we had long conversations with the posik for the Eruv, with the people who put up the Eruv. Rav Schechter is very much entitled to his opinion. That's for sure. So he has his chumras.
So Rav Asher Weiss permits the Eruv in the Five Towns.
I don't think he ever took a full tour of the Eruv, but he that particular issue, he does not think is an issue of the train, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, no problem. Have a great day.
We want to wish, first of all, a big mazel tov on your new building.
Thank you.
Mazel tov. And Chag Koshev is Sameach, Rabbi, and we look forward to the next year after Pesach.
Oh, wow. Okay. Chag Kosher V'Sameach, everybody. Okay. Thank you.
Chodesh Nissan. Yochel Mirosh Chodesh.
Yeah, we're there. Okay.
Yeah, we are.
V'Sameach, everyone.
Okay. Call to.
Thank you.